Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week we're going to be taking a look in depth into three different issues that have crossed our news feeds in the last 7 days. For those of you not familiar with the Roundup, what we do each week is we take three stories and where we get them from, you may be curious. So we have a newsletter we produce at SMIE Consulting called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international ed news that we track throughout the year. We put about 10 to 15 stories on as part of the newsletter each week that are international ed stories. And then we also produce there's five or six social media stories and how those have implications, sometimes very much directly to what we do in international ed. So what I'm going to do today is be sharing with you some of my thoughts and insights on our changing profession. And as I go, I'll be posting some of the links to the stories that I'm covering today in the comments section here on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. For those of you who are tracking with us on the on our YouTube channel, on Rewind, or on here on the Facebook page, thank you for checking out what we have to say. Really encouraged to get any comments you have, anything you'd like further explanation on. Happy to take care of that offline or in another online forum for you. As I do, I post the link to each newsletter where the stories that we're covering today are coming from. The newsletter comes out Monday mornings, and we take three of those stories each week and profile those here on the Midweek Roundup. We like to go a little bit more in depth into some of those key stories because we think there's more meat on the bone, so to speak, in terms of what we can share with you here on the Roundup that might help you understand better the issues going on and maybe get some examples of how your institution might be able to change things up a bit and adapt your strategies as it relates to international student recruitment. And we're also very proud to say that we've crossed the 100 subscriber platform on for our podcast. So for those of you listening on podcast, we're really appreciative that you've 100 different subscribers or in the international ed field or are listening to our Midweek Roundup each week. And thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be coming into your ears and sharing our thoughts on what's going on with our profession. So thanks, and if you're looking for where to find that, if you're not already subscribing to the podcast, you can check that out on Google Play, iTunes, all your favorite providers, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, wherever you'd like to collect your podcasts. Usually you'll find us. So thanks again for being a part of that. Where we're going to start today, I had the pleasure about a week and a half ago of being interviewed by the team down at Andrea Hoyman, actually down at Synorbis. In Australia. For those of you who are on the U.S. International Ed side, you may not have heard of them yet. They have been working primarily with Australian universities that, as we've all found out recently, have become incredibly dependent on China as a source of students for their campuses and funding, of course. And we talked through, Andrea and I, talked through some of my history in international ed over the last 27 years. This July, it'll be 27 years, and how much the profession has changed. But we also took a sharp focus on China, particularly in light of what's happening with COVID-19 and all of the implications that has for our lives in general, but specifically international higher ed and student mobility. So the interview itself is about an hour, about an hour long interview. So it's a fairly hefty read, but she's distilled the bulk of what I had to say into some very, very bite sized chunks. Talking through my international ed journey, how much the profession has changed, and I talked through some of it, just the dramatic differences in the way we conduct business in international admissions, international student recruitment, and how websites obviously were just in their infancy in the early 90s when I started, and how has been one of the most significant long-term developments. Obviously, the rise of internet technologies have allowed messages to be broadcast much more broadly and to be received much more quickly. talking through some of the ways incidents have happened that to change what we do. 9/11 was certainly one of them, and responses by institutions and in our case in Indiana, our state consortium, Destination Indiana, talking through some of how we still prioritize the Middle East at that point, but we realized since we weren't physically going to be traveling there in the near future, we had to look to other means and other tools to get our word out. Where we started in 2005, live video college fairs, and how that served through video conferencing technology that we used to connect with six of our institutions in Indiana and six Education USA advising centers across the Middle East from Morocco to Oman. So a real, it was actually a nice refresher for me and reminder for me on just how significant those steps we took in with our state consortia post 9/11 as a response to that, those kind of dramatic events and the downturn that we saw from certainly the majority of the Muslim world at that time, though we still wanted to recruit from those countries. So the context of that discussion post 9/11 certainly had some implications. We've been dealing in the Trump era here in the U.S. and how that's impacting the world's view of us as a destination, though most folks outside the United States, potential students that were looking at the United States, still hold us in high esteem, but they're keeping their options open, really. And that's something we've had to deal with. And what we've seen is other students looking at other destination markets, and particularly about China, we see with COVID-19 and what this is, what the virus's implications have been since it originated in China, where, as we talked about in the past couple of weeks, that over 100,000 Chinese students that are currently studying at Australian universities weren't able to, they were home for the Australian summer break, and they were looking to return for courses that started this month, and they haven't been able to do so. So what Australian universities have been doing is working online, having their courses available online material for courses that they were going to be that these students had registered for since they haven't been able to travel. They were able to access that information online. That was an incredible transformation in China, because internet restrictions had to be relaxed in order for a lot of that information to be available. So in communicating with during this interview about particularly US's strategies related to China, one of the things that popped up is really that most institutions that have done well in China have there are a few that have obviously had concrete plans, established offices early in or late in the noughties, early in the teens, to reach that market more directly, more efficiently, more appropriately. But the greater majority of institutions that had a China wave from the late noughties to the mid-teens really weren't prepared. They saw dollar signs coming in, and they didn't necessarily see this as a long-term strategy. They say, we'll ride this wave as long as we can, and when it's done, we'll figure something out. And for a lot of U.S. institutions, they're having to figure something out right now, because the numbers of Chinese students in the U.S. peaked around 2015, 2016. And certainly we're seeing here now a number of institutions that are really struggling because they have become so China-dependent, with over half their applications and well over 40% of their students being from China. That is having an impact now, and potentially will be in the fall. We're not sure yet how it's going to wash out come the fall here in the U.S. In terms of new student enrollments. But certainly, we're looking forward to but we're certainly going to see some very very challenging times here in the U.S. as many institutions come to grips with how do you manage a country like China, and if you don't have a physical presence on the ground in that country, you're not able to travel there. So what are you doing? There are institutions across the country that have had to cut a lot of spring travel, not just to China, but to other surrounding countries, that because of fears of the virus and travel restrictions, U.S. Airlines not traveling en masse to outside the U.S. Regularly. A lot of friends who were on trips in the last couple of weeks are in the process of returning home, or some of them are having significant travel challenges getting back just because of airlines have been cutting back on their flights internationally from to and from the United States. So we'll see where it shakes out in the fall, but the clear evidence is that institutions are scrambling right now to how do we deal with China. We're going to have some stories next week in our newsletter that we'll probably profile here again on the roundup next week about what some of those strategies are and can be. And in my interview with Synorbis, I talk about a three-pronged strategy of having your partners in country, having a solid digital footprint that reaches China, and oftentimes that means having locally hosted information in country. And I'll also talk about, in addition to partners and an additional digital footprint, it's having a physical presence there by being either going in country on recruiting tours, and I mentioned a few of those that are going now or have been going over the last few years. But it's really interesting looking at where institutions that have been active in China that are now realizing they need to be much more intentional about how they manage China. I know a couple of institutions I'm working with, they've had representatives based in Beijing or Shanghai that they've had in place for a year, year and a half, and are still working out the kinks in terms of how that person works, not just physically doing the recruitment work that they need to be doing and managing their any online content for the Chinese social media specific platforms they need to be on, but also how do you work with your alumni? How does that person work with potential partners? If it's a entry level or fairly low level admissions person that is based there, maybe in a recent grad who has that freshness of contacts, perhaps that makes sense for the admissions piece, working with current students and young alumni. But is it the best person to be there for partnership development or working with your agents? So these are things that obviously are longer term discussions that institutions need to have. But having a physical presence is important, whether that's direct recruitment or having a person in country to serve those needs. It's developing partners, whether that's through Education USA, whether through agent networks that you may be looking to work with, or partner institutions. Could be a combination of all three. So the stronger your network is in country, the better your overall approach will be. Where you recruit in China is also part of the puzzle. If you're not a name brand school, is it worth you spending all your time in Beijing and Shanghai? Probably not. Should you be looking outside of the consular cities even to second and third tier cities that might be more open to not top 100 schools from various rankings? So these are things that you need to really think about in terms of where you want to be. And that's the kind of approach you need to take with China, as with, frankly, any legitimate international student recruitment plans, is they need to be long-term. If you have key markets, China may certainly be one of them. India is probably another. Vietnam might be one. You might have others that you have concentrations of international students from. But how are you developing those country assets? How are you working with the fairs and the school visits that you do? Do you have networks of agents or partner institutions for joint degrees or other opportunities for partnerships? So these are the things that are really I don't see happening very well. There's some interesting information that's coming out from China about when students are starting to go back to school in the next couple 3 weeks. That travel restrictions are being loosened, and maybe that's the epicenter of the coronavirus is calming down a bit. So we'll see what happens. But there's in terms of student recruitment, there's really a lot that is still TBA. And really, I encourage all of my colleagues who are currently recruiting there just to keep the faith and don't give up too soon, because you have to be in this for the long haul. And the sooner our institutions realize that, I think the better our response can be to prospective students and parents on how we manage this. It's not great for those that are in the midst of it right now, but it's certainly something that will pass, maybe not as fast as we want it to pass, but it will pass. And how we respond now will speak volumes in terms of how whether we see the results we want down the road. So next up, related to this, though, is institutional responses to the virus, coronavirus, and its impact on student recruitment. And we've talked at in the past couple of weeks about how we've seen a number of testing organizations, certainly College Board, ETS, have canceled exams throughout China for certainly all of March, and April dates are still TBA. I mean, we're talking worldwide implications here. It's not just these testings that are being potentially in threat. That's already there's also already sporting events that have been called off because of this, because of the virus and the epidemic that it could well become a pandemic. But these are things that when we think about testing, we think about what international students processes the international students go through to get to the United States to apply. For students in China that are in their final semester, starting their final semester, they haven't been able to start this week. There's, as we talked about last week, there's even the chance that the Gaokao exam in June might be postponed until if things haven't settled down enough. So there's a lot of implications down the road. But as it relates to testing, there's a story I just posted the link to from University of Missouri Columbia. A colleague of mine, Ryan Griffin, he's the director of international admissions for undergraduate recruitment. Is particularly as it relates to English language testing, they've come up with obviously TOEFL and IELTS, PTE academic exams have not been available. They are now turning to Duolingo and saying that students can to take the Duolingo test, which can be done online anywhere, doesn't have to be at a test center. That is an option for those students that aren't able to get to an exam in March or April until they are able to reconvene those. So really, international admissions offices tend to be fairly flexible and need to be, frankly, in this kind of environment we live in. And certainly, as opposed to most universities, which tend to be glacially slow, we saw examples of how they are changing and moving very quickly as it relates to the Chinese students in attending Australian universities, how they were able to make those Australian universities able to make their information online, and they had to, really. That's their lifeblood, those students. Over 58% of Chinese students that should be in Australian institutions right now are still back in China. So kudos to Mizzou for making the decision to allow an alternative to TOEFL and IELTS for those that weren't able to get to on March exams that were still looking to maybe get admitted for the spring or for the fall term. So by offering students the option to take Duolingo, that certainly allows them. And Ryan makes the point in the article here that they've had to cut a lot of travel, not just to China, but other travel to the 6 weeks of travel or so to other countries in East Asia that are impacted as well by the coronavirus. So when one part of your strategy isn't possible with a physical presence by travel that you might do, you have to think of alternatives. And I'm sure many of these schools that have planned travel will be looking and should be looking to look at more virtual options, to holding live chats with students at particular in particular areas that are already in their prospect pool or applicant pool. So that's, I think, a next step for a lot of institutions is seeing what happens on that front with regard to adapting their policies, their procedures, their approach to student recruitment in China for this upcoming fall term. So really excited to see, and any colleagues out there who have those kind of ideas that they'd like to have profiled here on the Roundup, happy to share that. I know international ed colleagues are generally very willing to share their good ideas, and happy to give you a platform here to do that to a larger audience of colleagues that are probably sharing those same concerns and are looking for potential solutions themselves. So that's a great story coming out of Mizzou in Missouri. So happy to see that, and good people down at Mizzou making some changes that allow students some other options. So that's always good to see that. We're going to finish today with a report, and I'm always interested when I see these trends reports, and some of them are just kind of dime a dozen and rehash a lot of content that you might see on any number of different publications. But this one is actually a group called Education Rethink. First time I've really seen anything of their solid of their work. And they tend to take a more global view of things when it comes to English-speaking destinations for international students. And they've come up with, in the course of their report that they've released, and I'll put the link to the PDF report in the comments section, so please do check that out. They've come up with five main trends that they see as impacting international ed moving forward, as it impacts major English-speaking host countries. First up is India rises while China dependence persists. And we're talking here, the four major English-speaking destination countries, US, UK, Australia, and Canada. And it kind of shares the fastest growing graph that shows the fastest growing student markets across the four prime destination markets. Australia has growth in a number of areas. Looking at India, they've seen a slight drop off this year in China, but Philippines, Nepal, Colombia, interestingly, we saw Brazil a couple weeks ago being high on their list, but Vietnam, Pakistan, Sri Lanka all had significant chunks of at least 2,000 students each increases in students to those from those countries to Australia. You see the UK doing particularly well in India. We've seen the reports there, and we saw that jump in the last year because of their reintroduction of the two-year post-study work visa. They've also seen tremendous success in China. We'll be pursuing some of that next week in the roundup about why the UK has seen such dramatic, and actually I think they cover that here in this report, so we may actually touch on it this week. But those two countries are miles above any the next largest in terms of fastest growing markets for the English-speaking world. The proportion, this is interesting, the proportion of total student visas issued to applicants from China and India in 2019, Canada had over 55% or so of their total student visas issued or study permits issued went to students from China and Canada. US was about 42%, Australia was about 41%. So those three destination countries for Chinese and Indian students if one of those disappeared as that could have significant repercussions for the higher ed industries in those countries. The second trend that Education Rethink has listed is a directionless U.S. continues to falter. And when they say directionless, they mean, I think, just the fact that we're seeing a decline in new international student enrollments the last 3 years, probably again this coming fall. But after China, and they're going based on visa issuance numbers, and beyond China, no international market saw F1 issuance grow by more than 500 visas in the last year. And they said that there were more than 500 visas issuance decline in the last year in Mexico, Brazil, Nigeria, Japan, and Saudi Arabia. Certainly those five countries, Saudi Arabia, we can understand. Mexico with the political rhetoric going on with immigrants here. Nigeria, there's been that with the shutout and visa issuance or the closure of recent visa issuance, but that this is 2019 data, so there are other factors that were impacting those numbers, obviously. Japan has been a declining market for a while, so it's interesting to see why that's happening. The third trend is, and they do, I should say about the visa issuance trend, the directionless U.S. piece, they actually do take into account, and I know friends out there who are on the visa side, on the student advising side, while saying, well, they introduced the 5-year F-1 visa in 2015, so that's why I had the decreases in 2016, 17, 18. So that's all true, and they do actually have a chart that makes that quite clear for the U.S. So third trend is Australia leans into its vocational sector. And this is something we've actually seen Australia do in the mid to late noughties, when they were absolutely booming. You did see that the international enrollments as a percentage that were tied to vocational students increased from 14.3% in 2004 to 32%, so almost a third in 2009. So that used to be a huge sector for Australia, and may well be again soon, particularly if you see other drop-offs from China. So Australia is going to be increasingly reliant on their vocational sector to help prop up their international student numbers. So we'll take a look. We'll keep an eye on that one. We've seen certainly the last two years. We've seen the UK start to move on the upward trend in terms of their international student enrollments. The Education Rethink Group, they say that their visa refusal rate is rapidly declining, and that's leading many to believe the refusal rate actually for UK visas is actually incredibly low. And then we're talking about Tier 4 visas, which is the equivalent of US F1 student visas. Back in 2010, it was a fairly substantial, over 25% of Tier 4 visas were being refused. So that number has dropped in 2019 to less than 1.5%. And that's just remarkable. I mean, US, I think approval rates were as high as a global average was about as high as 80 to 86% at its peak in the late noughties. So that meant at minimum 14% of visa applicants were getting denied to the U.S. student visa applicants. So this is really something that is remarkable, to have less than 1.5% of your student visa applicants be rejected for visas. So that has a lot to do with it, and certainly I think the U.S. could learn a thing or two from that. 2019, the numbers were only 75 applicants out of 100 were issued student visas in 2019, so that's significant. So that's a big difference, and they have a declining visa rate, their increasing proportion of Chinese students, so there are going to be questions about quality control in the UK, about the universities that are enrolling some of these students that may not be fit to purpose for those institutions, and that we maybe see Australia-like symptoms popping up there in the coming years. We'll certainly keep an eye out on that as well. Last trend that the Education Rethink folks have is global volatility increasingly impacts recruitment. And certainly no argument here. We're all seeing that in our day-to-day work. And certainly the trends report from Education Rethink certainly reflects that. So it's certainly a messy world out there, and one that requires a lot of patience and a lot of prayers to make it through these tough times. But I know that for many of you that have been involved in international ed for any period of time, you realize this is par for the course over the last few years, and it's time to get serious and find solutions, and make sure you're talking to colleagues, and make sure you're having the conversations with your supervisors, with your leadership at your institutions, to make them aware of them. They're peripherally aware of the impact these events are having on our profession, but you need to be reinforcing that constantly. If you're not, it's a missed opportunity that can come back and bite you. So it's always better to be over-inform your supervisors and your administration than to not. And to just say, well, it was happening and there's nothing we could do. You never know where the sources of information and support might come from. So As for now, we're going to say goodbye and for today, and look forward to catching up with you on a future Midweek Roundup. So have a wonderful week. Cheers.